Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Ever feel frustrated over constant conflict over screen time?
Yeah, or do you find you're always nagging your child to do their homework and it's just a pervasively negative attitude at home? Well, we've got a great guest for you today. We are so pleased to bring Ned Johnson into our podcast conversation. This is actually a guest, Tony, who was recommended by a listener of our podcast.
Yes, we're thrilled to have this conversation with Ned Johnson today. He wrote a book called The Self-Driven Child, and he has some really fascinating theories Absolutely. That he has seen in practice. So if you've been thinking about, you know, how can I get my child to be self-motivated mm-hmm. to do their homework rather than, you know, me having to always remind and push and, you know, cajole, it just seems like I always have to be on my child's back or they won't do their homework. Yeah. But what if there's a better way? And that's what I love about Ned is that he tells you there is a better way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I did start reading his book and found that, you know, a lot of what he has to say jives so much with other episodes that we've done on here on collaborative problem solving and what causes stress in our children. Mm-hmm. And so I was so pleased to invite him to join our show today and discover that the self-driven child is not just a 10-year-old in a Tesla. It's and actually much more than that. So glad to have Ned Johnson join us today.
Ned Johnson is an author, speaker, and the founder of Prep Matters, which is an educational company providing academic tutoring and a standardized test prep. He's written for various media outlets, including the New York Times. He has co-authored 3 books, including the one I mentioned, The Self-Driven Child, which is a national bestseller. And since 1993, he has spent more than 40,000 one-on-one hours helping students with motivation, anxiety management, and performance. And of course, he's been working with their parents as well, empowering these students to reach their full potential. So without any further ado, let's get into our conversation with Ned Johnson.
Ned Johnson, welcome to the Smart Family Podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Listen, tell us a bit about of your background and how you and your co-author of The Self-Driven Child, Bill Stixrud, came to work with children, especially students and their families.
Yeah. So I'm a test prep geek. I've spent almost 30 years and something like 50,000 hours one-on-one helping kids prepare for and battle the whole alphabet of standardized tests for, you know, SAT, ACT, GRE, GMAT, all that kind of jazz. Yeah. And Bill's a clinical neuropsychologist. So he tends to work more with kids where, you know, things aren't easy. Learning isn't easy. Attention isn't easy. You know, self-regulation behaviors aren't easy. And trying to help them understand how their brains work and kind of what will help them. And probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, we started, we got invited to do some lectures about teens and motivation. And in the course of doing this, discovered that we really liked how one another thought and spend more and more time together. And at some point, Bill said, you know, it seems to me it might be fun to write down some of the things that we think are important, maybe write a book. And that was sort of the start of the self-driven child. At one point, Bill had asked, he said, of all the things that we talk about, does it seem to you like there's an organizing principle? And I said, it seems to me that everything that we talk about is really helping kids sort of feel a sense of control. And so part of that is that, you know, the subjective sense of agency, but it's also the brain state that supports that, that when our quote unquote right minds, the prefrontal cortex will regulate the stress response and kind of things go a little bit better. And so whether it's sleep or meditation or self-talk, all these things that can help support the brain state that supports the feeling that you know, hashtag I got this and I'm in control of my own life in a healthy way.
If there's one thing that you would want our listeners to walk away with today from this episode, what would it be?
Well, because I assume a lot of your parents have concerns about school and college and the like, we feel really strongly, and I say this even though I wear a hat as a test prep geek, that the most important outcome of childhood and adolescence and high school is not where you go to college. it's developing the brain, wiring the brain, the experts talk about, that you're going to carry into adulthood. And we see so many young people who have stress-related disorders of anxiety and depression and all the behaviors that can go along with that. And also people have kind of dysregulated motivation. They're either obsessively driven in ways that lead to really not good places, or figuring like, why, if I can't be top 10%, why even bother? And, you know, we want kids to be stressed. Our second book talks about, the subtitle is How to Talk with Kids to Build Motivation. And that's intrinsic motivation, not extrinsic, and stress tolerance. And we very purposely use that word stress tolerance rather than resilience, partly because it's been in 14,000 parenting titles. But really at a neurological level, resilience is the ability to tolerate stress and bounce back. And all the experience that the children have through childhood and adolescence can either bend them in the direction of being more intrinsically motivated and more able to tolerate stress in a healthy way, or less. And it, for us, it feels like that's where our energy should be. In part, just, you know, really trying to avoid people, young people, developing anxiety or depression at early age, because it just makes them so vulnerable to experience that in recurring bouts throughout their lives. And it's just, it makes it so much harder to live the life that you want to live.
Mm-hmm. If ever there was a time for families and kids to feel stress about the future, mm-hmm. You know, when you think about what's happened around COVID in the past year and a half, you know, now is a time, I'm sure. What have you seen, Ned, amongst children and families that are going through this difficult time? What are the big stressors out there that you are hearing from families?
Well, there are a few points that are to make on them. I mean, one, of course, is that there are enormous individual differences, right? Some people skated through, you know, COVID and their portfolios went through the roof, and other people had every kind of, you know, financial pit. I mean, just their lives were, you know, left in tatters. When we talk about kids, we understand that there are huge, you know, individual differences. So a lot of kids struggle like nobody's business. You know, they couldn't see their friends. They couldn't do their things they wanted to. Soccer would disappear. Everything that mattered to them. And they, you know, kids who are doing great in school and really thriving just kind of pancaked. But there are also kids who, you know, who did great under COVID, ones who are more introverted, kids who had a lot of social anxiety, you know, who didn't want to go to school. All of a sudden, having the autonomy and be able to do things from home in ways that worked for them. Some kids, I was just talking with a former student of mine who's now doing her master's in special education, and she said, COVID is the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, and so it's simply all over the place, and we want to pay attention to that. In terms of what the stressors are, we love the research of a woman named Sonia Lupien, who heads the Center for Studies of Human Stress in Montreal, Canada. And she has this acronym of NUTS, of what makes people nuts, of stresses us out. And N is novelty. You know, so it's not just the coronavirus. Hey, it's the novel coronavirus. Thanks a lot, guys. U is unpredictability, right? I mean, if we knew that this thing was going to, you know, we finally go back to life, you know, on March 22nd of 2022, okay, that would be annoying because we want it to happen sooner, but at least we would organize around that. But if we don't know if it's December or it's 2022 or 2020, super hard. T is perceived threat, right? And so for kids, that's, you know, do I look, am I cool enough? Do people like me? Do I look stupid? Da, da, da. And for most of us, it's been kind of threat to ego, of course. Welcome to pandemic virus. Everybody on the street is now a physical threat to us. And then the last thing is a low sense of control. And Dr. Lupien makes the point that it's this low sense of control that is the most stressful thing to the human nervous system. We can talk, if we have a sense of control in a way that we can manage, not enjoy, but manage these first three things, we come out okay. And so one of the challenges with this pandemic is our sense of control has felt so low because we look around and go, what can I do about this? And so with families, it's been a real challenge because there's a little bit of a zero-sum game here. You know, that in order to have kids have more control over their lives in a healthy way, we have to give it up a little bit. And with so many parents watching their kids, you know, kind of do school, you know, kind of up close and personal, or perhaps more accurately, not do school with a front row view, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, this has not been an easy time for anyone. And for some, it's been really, really tough. And if I can make one more quick point on that, I wrote an article for the Washington Post here in the States at the very start of COVID about this idea of whether COVID would create an opportunity for young people to develop greater resilience. because we know that it's the experience of adversity plus support that creates resilience, right? And so we need, as parents, we need to be in the position to be able to support our kids and nurture them to the degree that they need. Adversity without support, that becomes trauma, right? And so I wouldn't wish the headwinds of the last year on anybody. But goodness, if there's a possibility that some people are actually going to come out of this stronger. Some people are going to be hard workers, but if we can look at this to say, well, we might as well make of this what it is. So I'm kind of pathologically optimistic guy. So I'm holding to that outcome as best I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they talked about this sort of K-shaped curve almost with going through COVID where, you know, there was half the population or some proportion of it that kind of did well and fared well. In all different aspects, you know, various aspects, and another part that did not do so well. And so this gap has existed now, and it's, you see it in classrooms. There are some kids who have fallen behind significantly and others who have at least stayed up or have even exceeded expectations. And so now you've got this huge, much more of a range of kids in a classroom, which is of course a challenge for the classroom, but also for the teachers and for parents. Right. So I totally understand what you're saying there.
Switching gears just a bit. I know that there are people out there listening who have experiences similar to what I had when, you know, my kids were in public school. My son, for example, was taking music lessons. And for 5 years, you know, first few years were fine. Last couple of years, I heard this crescendo of, I hate piano. Why do I need to do this? And I had this sense that if I changed course and didn't have him continue with his piano lessons, that I was somehow letting him down in his future life. I finally got to the point where I had to decide, okay, I do not want my son to hate music for the rest of his life, and I'm going to just let go of the piano lessons at this point. But it took me honestly probably about a year to get there. And so I just listen with so much really intensity to what you say about having your kids develop that sense of control or agency. And I'd love to hear more from you about why control is so important for our kids, even when they're younger and at that age where we feel like, oh, I still have the responsibility to, you know, to set them up well for their lives.
It's a great question, and it's certainly a pain point, I think, for pretty much every parent who's ever walked with their kids through school and life. First of all, you know, I would argue that people can arguably have a successful life if they don't know how to play violin. And I'm teasing, I'm giving a hard time, of course, because there's so much joy. You know, we have a very musical family, and it's such a source of joy for us. But in the same way that people can have successful lives, even if they're not successful in school. And I say this because so much of our fear about our kids, it's really not about right now, it's about the future. And so if we can hold to this idea that we don't have to take what's terrible, what's not going well now and sort of extrapolate towards, you know, and he lives in a box down by the side of the river. In terms of music or school or gosh, anything, I think if we really pause and reflect, it's not so much that we want our kids to work hard. We want them to want to work hard, right? You don't want your kid to play violin because you want him to play violin. You want him to play violin because he plays violin. And of course, you can know, gosh, if you're really good at this, you would have this great love for this, and it could be a source of enrichment, fulfillment for years and years. I mean, my wife has a goal. She plays violin. She's going to turn 50 this year. She has a goal that she wants to be. She's been playing in this semi-professional violin since she was in her 20s, and she wants to play until she's at least 80. And I'm like, it's just lovely, right? But so here's the deal. Classically with motivation, we use carrots and sticks, right? We use extrinsic motivators to get kids to do things that we know are in their or believe are in their own best interest. But the challenge is my pushing my kid to play violin or to do his homework. There's no point at which that extrinsic motivation transmogrifies into inner drive, to inner, you know, the self-driven motivation that we want. But the great news is there's a model for intrinsic motivation. It's called self-determination theory, and it's one of the most supported models in all of psychology. Thousands of studies done in some 30 plus years now. And it holds, in order for people to have inner drive, there are three foundational psychological needs that need to be met. One, you need a sense of for competency, right? So if you're terrible, terrible, terrible at the violin, yeah, maybe we should get a teacher or someone or more practice, or I'll help you, whatever I can do to help you feel that you're good enough. Two, a sense of relatedness, that personal connection. And three, a sense of autonomy. So the challenge when we say, shouldn't you be doing your homework? Sweetheart, it's time to practice. We risk overemphasizing competency, competency, competency at the expense of the relatedness, because we're no longer, I love hearing you play. It's so fun to, oh my gosh, would you play that again? We become the music police, right? And we undermine their autonomy. And we also, particularly with school, we risk undermining all three with, shouldn't you be doing your homework? Because I know better than you do. And without doing this, you wouldn't be doing it at all, which is basically a way of saying you're incompetent. And it's hard, hard, hard to walk this walk. But I, you know, Bill works again with all these kids where learning is hard. And he said, I swear, he said, when adults spend 80 units of energy trying to get kids to spend 20, and the adults get more stressed and they go to 90, the kid goes to 10. And it does not change until the energy changes. So, you know, with things like music or sports for that matter, the people who I know who are experts on coaching, they said the best thing you can possibly do if you've got a young kid is to say, I love watching you play. Oh, it's so fun to hear you practice. It's so fun to hear you play. And then you can move into what we talk about as a consultant, say, would it help you if I reminded you to practice so you feel as prepared as you want to be for your lesson with Ms. Smith on Thursday? No? Okay. Well, if you want me to, let me know. And we think of ourselves as consultants, not managers, because I've been asking my students for years now. And basically they ask the question, what happens when your parents say, shouldn't you be doing your homework? They say, it makes me not want to do my homework. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because again, these, whether you got a kid who's 2 or 12 or 20, these are foundational psychological needs to feel competent, to feel relatedness, and most of all, to feel this sense of autonomy. That's the whole reason we wrote The Self-Driven Child.
Yeah. But I do hear from a lot of older kids and adults that say, you know, I love that I can, you know, play the piano now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, if it wasn't for my parents sort of making me do it and sitting me down, I wouldn't have stuck with it unless it wasn't for my parents kind of nagging me. And now I appreciate it because now I've got this skill and it's translated into other, you know, joyful parts of my life. Isn't that a case for maybe the parents,
well,
nagging?
Like, I mean, if your kid wants to take piano lessons, right, or guitar lessons or whatever, you negotiate those things in advance. So it was, sure, listen, pal, I'm happy to pay for this. And I think Ms. Smith is fantastic. Let's agree on what's a reasonable amount of practice that you'll do so that we can both feel like you're making the best use of this time, right? And you negotiate that in advance. The challenge is we tend to do that not in advance and it's not collaborative problem solving. We're also huge fans of family music, family meetings where you meet on Sunday. So, you know, it looks to me like you're really struggling to get any work, you know, any practice done in this. And I'm not feeling so great about this, right? Do you want to be doing music? I mean, because if you don't want to, I sure don't want to make you. But it's, you know, can we agree on this? Or again, does it help if we set a special time that you practice from 3:15 to 3:35? So at least you get 20 minutes in every day. And you negotiate with kids because you cannot make people do things against their will. It's just a fact. And we cannot make kids want what they don't want, and we can't make them not want what they do want. But we can do all these things that we know. I mean, there are thousands of studies based on this. And, you know, Bill talks about it. He said, when I was a kid, I wanted to play the accordion. who knows why the accordion? And his parents were like, well, we have a piano. We have a piano. Now, if you, you know, and because accordion is kind of expensive, we already got a piano. If you'll play, practice piano, you know, and take it seriously for a year, then we'll talk, then we can talk about getting an accordion. And he said, I started doing this, but the teacher wanted me to learn to read music. And I said, have a great ear. I could sight play. I could just do things from listening. I just didn't want to do it. I didn't like it. And he said, I begged my parents to let me quit. And they let me quit. And he said, I am so grateful because a few years later, when he was a teenager, the Beatles came to town, Bill 71, the Beatles came to town. And I picked up a guitar and started playing piano. And he said, and I joined a band. And he said, I played for hours and hours and hours and hours. This is in our book. He said, I would practice 3 hours a night. And I think I'll just take 10 minutes and be 3 hours, total flow experience. And he said, I'm convinced that I wired my brain to be intrinsically motivated because of that flow experience. Bill still plays in a rock and roll band. And he said, I play more music on a regular basis than anybody I have ever met who has been forced to take lessons. So, you know, again, I think with music, the easiest way is to model it. You know, I mean, my wife will go and play all the time, and because for our kids to hear that, I hear you on that, Rob, and I think we can gently nudge, and we can absolutely gently nudge. But if your kid is fighting you over and over and over, you want to take a step back and really ask, who is this for?
Yeah, no, I agree, and I love your collaborative problem solving approach. We've had Dr. Ross Green on the show as well, and. And Alfie Cohn as well. He would also sort of talk about these sorts of ways of solving these issues in your family and talking with the children about it and getting their point of view and their perspective. But you know, the concept of letting them quit, you know, is a tough one for parents to swallow.
It,
I think
it is hard. I mean, a part of it, I think we have a different movie playing in our head than they do. I mean, we wrote a book or an article a couple of years ago called The Quitter's Ditch. And what we worry is that our kids are going to quit this and they're never going to find anything, right? But at least where I live in DC, you know, like, let's see here. You can do soccer. You can do basketball, violin, piano. Those are very acceptable. It's very, very, very narrowly of the things that kids are supposed to love as opposed to, I don't know, small engine repair or rock climbing or, you know, orienteering or. And we worry that if a kid doesn't find a passion at age four, they're never going to get a college scholarship. And it's like, give me a break, right? Because exactly. People can find their passion at all sorts of different ages. And for every kid there is who's precocious, there are lots of adults who are postcocious, right? You know, and they hit their stride later. And so I worry so much when we want, particularly for little kids, we want play to be play. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Peter Gray, who says that play, it's not adult directed, right? And it's not adult organized, right? And so in a perfect world, you let kids have music. You know, my son didn't start playing, I'll point this out, didn't start playing piano until 9 because we asked a really good piano teacher. When my kid was 5, she said, wait for it because we want him to do it and really engage. My son is a music major in college. He is the most otherworldly talented musical kid that I know. I mean, it just like, and we waited until he was 9. So, you know, and part of you said this other CC kid, you know, the other thing, we all worry that if we take it slow, that someone else will take it fast and their kid will take our kid's spot. Right? And it just ain't true.
Oh, we parents deal, some of us anyway, so much with that anxiety about our kids' futures. And yet you say things like, I love you too much to fight with you over your homework. Mm-hmm. What can you feed our minds with so that us anxious parents can let go?
So there are a bunch of things. I mean, part of the reason we talk about this, and we also have a chapter called The Non-Anxious Presence, which you might talk about, it's simply that from a brain perspective, the executive functions, right? Organization, planning, keeping things in mind, self-control, mental and emotional flexibility that reside in the prefrontal cortex. When we stress and the amygdala flares, those go bye-bye, go bye-bye, right? And so when we lean on, should you be doing your homework, right? With this energy, right? And the kid feels controlled and then they stress. We're now asking them to do like real stuff with a brain that isn't able to do real stuff. And it is hard because we of course we want kids to be educated. Of course we do, because it's good for their lives. It's good for our families, for our schools. It's good for the whole bloody country for people to be as educated as possible. But it's also worth noting, and Rob, you probably know this better than most, that most of the development that we see in kids is not through education. It's through brain development. Most of these benchmarks will happen regardless of how engaged kids are in school or not. But again, we want kids to engage in school, not because I want them to go to this or get college, but because working hard at things and to get better and better and imperfectly in the world, it's something that you like, is one of the best possible things we can do for people's brains. So of course, by definition, 90% of kids are not going to be top 10% of their high school class. And we do a huge disservice to teachers, to our families, and most of all to kids by telling them you have to be at the top in order to have a successful life, in part because it's rubbish. It's rubbish. When you look at the statistics, the people who are the valedictorians of their high school class 10 years later, they're not meaningfully more successful than other people. In part because to be a valedictorian of high school class, you kind of have to be equally good at everything, right? And that's not how people build successful lives. And the great educator Mel Levine made the observation, one of the great gifts you can have is discover really early on in life what you suck at, right? And then you let it go and you pay attention to, I mean, Ken Robinson, the element, right? What are you better at? What are you naturally better at than most people? Not the best, but naturally better at, right? That you also like to do. And we try to pay attention to those things early on. And that's how we build lives. I mean, I was just talking with my podcast with Dr. Madeline Levine. She's got this new book, Ready or Not. And she was at some, giving a panel discussion. And it was James Hetfield, I think is his name, the lead guy for Metallica. And there was some dad who was carrying on. He was like a venture capital guy, blah, blah, blah. And he said, all my kid wants to do is play guitar, blah, blah, blah. And James sort of looks at him like, what? And he said, what do you think that I was doing when I was 12? You don't get a degree in counting at age 23, decide that you're going to be the lead guy for a rock and roll band, right? Right. And so I say this because not that I want like every kid to, you know, throw Met Geometry out the window and play rock and roll, but that all of our fear for our kids is about the future. And when we do that, it's much more likely to have kids get stuck. If we can hold to, I know school's harder for you, and I know you don't like it as much as most people. I get that. I also kind of think it's important. So is there a way that I can help, right? You know, when kids come to us and say things like, this is so stupid, right? We're like, oh my God, my kid's gonna ditch school altogether. And we start trying to lean into all the reasons why it is so important. And what we talk about in our new book, What Do You Say, is to lead with empathy and validation. We talk about this, the acronym of SURE. But first, stay calm, right? Don't catastrophize and think your kid's going to be a vagrant, right? Two, seek to understand. Well, tell me more. You seem really upset by this. Tell me more. Why is this so hard for you, right? We talk about reflective listening, this guy named Ron McGinn, which is simply repeating back to people. What you're telling me is you got this assignment, you don't understand why, and it's boring as all get out, and you got a test on this on Thursday and you're stressed out. I can see why you're pretty stressed out too. And then we explore options. Because a lot of times when kids are saying, this is stupid or I can't do this, what they're really saying is I feel overwhelmed. Right. And so we're not with that, I love you too much to fight with about your homework. We're not stepping away and saying school doesn't matter. We're saying, I'm not going to use the force of my will to get you to do this, but I will help you in any way I can, because I know you want to do well in school. So, you know, I can set office hours. If you're feeling lonely or stressed, I can sit with you and do this work with you, you know, but I don't want to work harder than you do. Because if I do that, I'm giving you the lesson that you can't do this stuff. And I just don't believe that, but I'll help you any way that I can. I don't want to make you weaker by doing too much. I want to make you stronger by doing just enough.
Can parents take that a little too far and help too much?
Oh, yeah. If you're doing, you know, Bill, you know, Bill had in his firm had trained hundreds of tutors, and he said, don't work harder than your kid or your client. He actually got this from a friend of psychologist. Don't work harder than your client does to help than they do to help themselves, because otherwise they will think that someone other than you is responsible for their success. It's a terrible thing. I had a student I was working with, test prep stuff, adopted kid from Russia, probably fetal alcohol syndrome, complicated brain, linguistically very, very capable, mathematics, kind of a mess. So I gave him a section to test, 60 questions that go easy to hard. I said, Matt, I want you to do the first 20, just the first 20. Do the best you can. If you don't know, leave a question mark. Totally fine. We'll go through this next week. Just want to see where it is. He comes back. It's perfect. Not what I expected. Yeah. Well, okay. So tell me about this. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that went okay. I said, it looked great. You got them all right. He said, oh, yeah, yeah. Jack helped me. Awesome. Who's Jack again? Oh, yeah. Jack's my other tutor. Oh, Yvette, are you kidding me? Right. And so I looked at him. I said, Matt, I said, do you lift weights? Now, Matt is like the 6'1", 200. Yeah, he lifts weight. He looked like, Spartan. And he said, yeah. And I said, can you remind me how spotting works? And for people who don't, if you don't lift weights, it's basically if I'm trying to lift this really heavy weight and I'm about to collapse, drop it on myself, Matt comes over and ideally pulls up just enough. So I struggle, and we get it up to the top. But if he goes up and just pulls up and I'm like, right, because he's a big, strong guy, it makes me, no. And this is really valuable. There's a guy named Steve Mayer, and we talk about his work in The Self-Driven Child. Now, Steve Mayer is most well known as a partner of Martin Seligman on the research of what's called learned helplessness, where they would take these animals, they'd shock them, bad stuff, and then eventually they'd open the cage and they'd shock them, and they wouldn't flee. They'd just sit there and endure it. So these guys had a paper called Learned Helplessness at 50, kind of what we got right, what we got wrong. And Meyer said, what we got wrong was this. It was not that these animals learned to be helpless. It's that they failed to learn a sense of control. So here's this, you're going to love this, experiment that they did. They have two rats in a cage, rat A and rat B. Their tails are out. They shock them. They don't like it. It's not going to kill them, but they sure don't like it. Explosion of cortisol, stress hormone in the brains. Little wheel in there. Rat A, when he spins the wheel, it attenuates the shock. He's like, this is awesome, right? Massive activation in the prefrontal cortex dampens down the stress response. This is what coping looks like. Rat B spins the wheel, nothing happens. They put him in other situations. Rat B now went big, scary rat. I can handle this. Bright lights. Okay. And he doesn't freak out. He starts going into coping mode. What can I do? Rat B, a disaster. Here's the super fun thing that they did. They then yoked the two rats. Okay. So rat A spins the wheel. He saves himself. He also saves brother rat B. Now, I am sure that brother rat B is grateful as all get out. But the experience of being saved over and over while rat B was happy, I'm sure, left him a basket case. So if we want our kids to become perpetually playing the role of the damsel in distress, go ahead. Save them over and over and over and over and over, and they will learn to be helpless because they have not learned a sense of control. To support your kids, say, gosh, that seems really hard. Is there a way that I can help? And we don't do more than they do. We don't do things for kids that they can do for themselves, even if it's messy. And keep in mind, the goal is not an A. The goal is it for it to be good enough. And because a hard-earned C, and I say this as an educator, from a long-term perspective, it's way better than an A because mom or dad, you know, did all the work for me. I see so many kids who are basically paralyzed in high school and college, and they know that they're frauds. They know that they're frauds, and their parents have taken away that opportunity for them to struggle and do their best, whatever that is.
Yeah, but it is hard though as parents to like not. It's much easier just to do it for them, you know. Like I get asked to help with math homework with I have four kids between the ages of 12 and 16, so they're all doing their math homework, and
yeah.
I get asked all the time because I have an undergrad degree in physics. So for me, when nice. I see Pythagorean theorem, it's like, okay, I can just do that, you know, for you like this, boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
And then that's much quicker than saying, well, okay, let's start with this. And then now you do this next step. And what do you think we should do next? So it does take a lot more
patience and time.
And patience and time. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Right. You know, and you know, I'm, you know, again, I have the advantage of having been a tutor for, you know, forever. And I have to do, when I work with students, I have to do it progressively. And it's kind of the Socratic, well, what about this? And what about this? And you try to give them just enough information, just enough help for them to put two and two together. And some kids need a lot of that. And some kids need only a little. And so let me be clear. I am not talking about letting your kids, you know, fail or flounder. If they ask for help, we give it to them, but we just don't want, if Matt does carries all the heavy weights for me, I never get stronger, right? And again, I want kids to be as successful as they can academically, but I care so much more about wiring young brains to say that, that I can handle this, and including getting bad grades, because it's the experience, again, of adversity plus support that builds resilience. There's a story in the self-driven child, my son, who's the loveliest child on the planet, ADHD, interesting brain, couldn't be the loveliest human you'll ever meet. So he was in middle school and he's doing something. And my wife, who's a very serious academic, teaches Latin at a local school, is helping him. And she's, I mean, she does school like it. I mean, she's a pro, right? And so she's asking him, and some assignment has not been done, not handed. I can't even remember the details. And she said, well, why didn't you do it? And he turns to her with the same kind of energy. He said, because you didn't remind me. And I'm like, oh, no, bad answer. And I'm like, timeout, people. I'm making their timeout, timeout. I go over to my son. I'm like, first of all, pal, you do not throw mom under the bus. That's a bad idea. Long term, don't do that. But also, dude, this is your work. Your mom's done fifth grade. Come on, right? And then I slide over to her. I said, look, and I said, that was obviously bad. That's clearly my side of the family. I'm sorry for this poor manners. But sweetheart, you can kind of see how he would say that you didn't remind me, because you always do. And my wife is one of these people who's so on top of life with executive, you know, a PhD in executive functions. She can run her schedule, my son's schedule, my dad, you know, Rob, if you need someone to, she very reasonable rates, right? She's just that kind of brain. It's incredible, right? But it's been a long time since she had the brain of a teenage boy. Right. And so we said, so we made this hard pivot towards really walking this walk and consult, offer, but not pursue and rescue. And he rewarded us with things like 52 on a test. Interesting. So tell me more about that. Do you know what happened there? Oh, yeah. I think I studied the wrong chapter. Oh, what chapter was it on? 6. What chapter did you study? 8. Learn anything? Yeah. Any sense on what could work better next time? Yeah. And we have that conversation, and I don't catastrophize about it. And now it's a lot easier to do this before high school. I get it, because those are the grades that start to matter for college and university. But.
So now just switching gears a little bit.
Sure.
We've got kids who have full lives. You know, let's say our kids are into music or they're into sports, they're putting in an effort at school. And I think many of our parents would identify with that situation of just having a very packed schedule. You know, our home lives, our kids' lives are full. And sometimes to the point where, you know, they're very tight margin for rest. You know, right. Does my kid really even have a couple of hours off during the week that is truly their own to manage? Rest seems to be something that we're starting to focus on more, I think, as a culture, because we're realizing how much we've cheated ourselves of rest in past years. So can you say a few words about, firstly, the importance of rest, but also some practical tips on how to incorporate more rest into your family's cal?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first of all, sleep insufficiency elevates cortisol, the dominant stress hormone. So being tired is going to look just like being stressed. And a pretty nice model, if you want to develop an anxiety disorder or depression, is to be too tired and too stressed for too long. So when you have kids through you know, kind of stressed and under-rested and overstressed for years in school, are we surprised that we have all these stress disorders? You know, from our model, we want people to work hard, but we want them to work hard and play hard and rest hard. And we so often think about rest to recover from the energy, but in the natural world, rest is the basis of all activity. So if you think about 168 hours in the week, and kids really should have between 8 and 10 hours of sleep as adolescents, how do you schedule 56 to 70 hours a week? And then, like taking a model from financial planning, then spend the rest of the time as opposed to pack everything you can in and try to figure out somehow to get 8 hours of sleep in 6 hours, can't be done. In terms of sleep, as you know, we think that we need to make this a family value, a family goal. And we work together to support one another to get enough rest, because in part, it's so much easier to love each other and to be tolerant of people's mistakes, you know, and to just be a happier person when you're not underrested. And so part of this is to work on this. And you can even think, are there things that we're doing that maybe we shouldn't be doing? Because if you're tired all the time, gosh, it's just not fun. I mean, we talk about sleep in both. We have a chapter on sleep and technology, separate chapters in both books. And it's so valuable. Part of in addition to sleep, is we talk about radical digital downtime. And the idea that the world moves so fast and most of us are so wildly overstimulated, parents and kids, that we really think we need practices that aren't just, you know, watching a movie or baking cookies or something, where we're really doing nothing. And so this is walking woods, giving opportunities for mind wandering. So this is why unstructured, undirected play is so valuable for little kids. It's meditation. Bill and I are both huge practitioners of transcendental meditation and mindfulness as well. And then, of course, sleep. Because if it's all activity and not enough rest, you get really bad outcomes. So I take this really serious. I also love the work. There's a beautiful book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, which if folks haven't read, it's just stunning. If you weren't convinced about sleep before, that this one will do it. But the research on sleep insufficiency is consistent, compelling, and grim. So I spend the amount of money that I've been paid as a test prep guy talking to kids about sleep is enormous. And you love this. I had a kid who was taking her test, and literally the week of the test, because we've done this forever, super anxious. And I was trying to get her to get more sleep, but she didn't want to, because she wanted to be on her phone with her friends, and her friends are super important to her. And I said, look, if you could go to bed at 10 o'clock every night this week rather than 11, I am absolutely convinced you're going to get that ACT score you want. And her face falls. She put my friends and said, oh my God, you're killing me. I said, what if your mom paid you? And she said, my mom wouldn't pay me. I'm like, I'll pay you. And she said, no, you won't. I said, I will. She said, you won't. She said, watch me. I said, but I don't trust you. So here's the deal. If you hand your phone to your mom at 9:45 and you're in bed, teeth brush, lights out at 10 o'clock, I'll give you $20. And she said, for the whole week? I said, I'll give you $20 a night. She said, no, you won't. I'm like, try me. So I meet her on Friday, right? And her mom swears that she's, because, you know, has gone to bed, done this. And I just peel off five $20 bills. And her score goes up 3 points on the ACT. Now, she always had that ability. She always had that ability. But because sleep insufficiency creates the same effects of stress, and she was a tightly wound kid, she went in there and her executive functions went kablooey, and she couldn't do what she was able to do. But when she was rested and could be more calm, she could. So we could do three more podcasts just about what I have to say about sleep. But you can't, sadly, we can't make people go to sleep. I mean, goodness knows if we paid $100 to get this, you know, infant to fall asleep, but it can't be done. But we want to talk about it. And as parents, we want to model the importance of sleep. When you're really tired, you say things like, oh, sweetheart, I'm sorry. I'm kind of cranky today. I didn't get enough sleep, but I'm, you know, please be patient with me. I'm doing my best. And a gentle way of just modeling that sleep is really important for our well-being, our mental health, and our happiness.
Yeah. Right. You said it was Why You Sleep by mm-hmm. Matthew Walker. Okay. Yeah. We'll note that in the show notes as well. Thank you. I feel like we could just keep going on and on, Ned, but here we are at the end of our conversation. And I would love for people to be able to find you and your resources. Where can they find you?
Well, thank you. Yeah. So Bill and I have a website, Self-Driven Child, or The Self-Driven Child, or Self-Driven Kids. Almost all of them work out there, but selfdrivenchild.com. I'm on social media Twitter is Ned at Ned Johnson. And I just started doing TikTok of all things a week ago. The other Ned Johnson on TikTok, you're going to adore this. I have very mixed feelings about social media generally, but I made what I thought was a pretty fun video that apparently other people liked as well. And as of this morning, it's 1.2 million views. So this has been interesting. It's about the Yerkes-Dodson curve, a kind of anxiety performance. Actually, it's in our first book. So, because if you Google Ned Johnson, you'll get the founder Fidelity. So he has a few more dollars. I'd like to think I have the sense, but you know, there we are.
So you're the other Ned Johnson on TikTok.
The other Ned Johnson. Yep. Okay. Exactly.
All right.
Great.
Wonderful.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your insights and wisdom with us. And your book's fantastic. What I like most about your book is actually the questions at the end, you know, the question and answer at the end of each chapter, and then what you can do tonight. Some real practical things you can do right now with your family. So thanks
for really appreciate sharing. You pulling that out. I mean, you know, parenting has never been easy and it's only gotten harder. And so, you know, kids don't need perfect parents, but all of us want to move in the direction of being as effective as we can. And so so I'm really glad you pointed that out, Rob, because we simply want to share what we know from our, you know, almost 7 years of working with kids and a whole bunch of research about what's effective, because there's nothing more stressful and upsetting than doing the best you can and having not be effective. And so if some of this can help people be a little bit more effective, that makes us awfully happy.
Well, I bet you've made a lot of people happy today, and this has been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, you guys are great. I really appreciate being with you.
Wow, what a great conversation with Ned Johnson. I mean, there were just so many things in there, Tony, that I'm just going to think about and take away to my own practice. When I talk to patients and parents about stress, I love the acronym that he had there, NUTS, you know, things that are new or novel, unpredictable, that are a threat to the ego or stressful, or a lack of sense of control, you know, and I see that so much, you know, when kids feel like they're not part of the solution or part of the decision-making process, when they've lost that sense of control, it can be really stressful and in a way defeating for them.
Right. I agree, Rob. I also loved that he talked about being a consultant as opposed to a manager.
Right.
That whole idea of coming alongside your child, providing them with support and asking them, how can I help? You know, it's your choice what you're going to focus on, but how can I help?
Yeah. And recognizing that your child may fail a math test when they're in grade 5, and that's not the end of the world. You know, that's not going to be life shattering. And in fact, it could be a really great learning opportunity. So keeping some perspective, I think, is a good idea for many parents. Well, thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this podcast episode as much as we did on the Smart Family Podcast. Please do leave us a review. If you enjoyed this episode, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review there. We just so much appreciate any feedback that we receive.
Hey, that's it for today. And as always, thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you have any ideas on content or guests, we would love to hear from you. It's our aim to bring you thought leaders and experts in the field who have advice and practical tips, all designed to help you love being home.